So we are basically on this theme right now for several months already. That is the Noble Eightfold Path. And each time we're talking about an aspect of this Noble Eightfold Path, and we've touched on a lot already, but there's still also a lot to cover, I think. And so the context that I usually like to give before starting the actual part that we're going into in today is to just say that this Eightfold Path, as is no surprise, consists of eight steps or eight practices. And these are traditionally divided into three different categories. The first category is the wisdom category. And there's two steps. That's wise view and wise intention are part of the wisdom category. Then we get the category of ethics or virtue. And that consists of wise speech, which is what the day long will be about, wise action, and wise livelihood. And then the last three aspects form together the cultivation or meditation category. The word is bhavana, which means literally cultivation, but it's often also referred to as meditation. And those three steps are wise effort, wise concentration, or rather wise mindfulness and wise concentration. And so today I want to give an overview of the step of wise mindfulness. This is actually a very broad category, like a very broad step. This is something that we probably can talk about for half a year, just in itself. So this is going to be quite a high-level overview. I want to just mention what the Buddha literally says in the suttas about what is right mindfulness. And depending on the teacher, each category is, like, you hear me say wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise view, but some teachers say right mindfulness, right view, etc. So it depends on the teacher how that word is translated. And in this translation, it's right. So the Buddha says, what is right mindfulness? It is when a mendicant or a monk meditates by observing an aspect of the body, keen, aware, and mindful, rid of covetousness and displeasure for the world. They meditate observing an aspect of feelings, an aspect of the mind, an aspect of principles, keen, aware, and mindful, rid of covetousness and displeasure for the world. This is called right mindfulness. And so that's not too long of a description, but what he's basically pointing to here is the four foundations of mindfulness, as some of you are familiar with. And those four foundations of mindfulness are described in this other sutta in more detail, which is called the Satipatthana Sutta. And this sutta is often translated as the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutta, or the Four Establishments of Mindfulness. And this sutta is pretty important sutta in our tradition, because it describes basically the practice that we're doing here. It's one of the most important suttas, and it's also a sutta that the Buddha refers to in his teachings, or at least he refers to those four establishments of mindfulness throughout the scriptures. And so the four, I'll just name them, and then I'll talk a little bit about each of them. The first one is the body. The second one is what's called feeling tone. The third one is the mind. And the fourth one is called dhammas. And the translation is kind of complicated, so I'll go into that when I get to that in the talk. And so the body, the section on the body in this sutta has actually for different practices. And it starts with the breath, So the first practice that the Buddha offers body-wise is the breath. I'll just read a little bit of the passage here. He says, it's when a mendicant gone to a wilderness or the root of a tree or to an empty hut sits down cross-legged, sets their body straight and establishes mindfulness in their presence. Just mindful they breathe in, mindful they breathe out. And so there's this monk who has translated this sutta, Bhikkhu Sujato. He says that this is the most fundamental meditation instruction. Notice how the Buddha phrases it, not concentrate on the breath as an object, but rather breathing as an activity to which one brings mindfulness. The stages of breath meditation are not meant to be done deliberately, but to be observed and understood as the natural process of deepening meditation. And so this breath is kind of this foundational practice that we can do, and that we also started with today when we were starting with the meditation. We did a little bit of a body scan, and then we started with the breath, basically. And so it's kind of this object, this mindfulness object that we can always fall back to. It's kind of can be like an anchor in our practice. And for some people, the breath actually does not work. And then it's good to know that there are other options too. Sometimes the option of sound is being offered, that you pay attention to sound as an anchor. And that's actually not in this sutta. What is in this sutta is, for example, that you can pay attention to the posture. You can pay attention to knowing that you're sitting, feeling the contact points of your body with the surface beneath it. Or, for example, how the hands are touching each other or how the hands are on the knees. It's kind of these touch points that you can use to anchor your attention. And so the body can actually be quite a good meditation practice because it's so stable compared to the mind. All the other aspects of this sutta or of this mindfulness practice are mind-based. So it can be very useful to start to cultivate a wholesome and healthy relationship with the body, to really know that you can feel the body, that you can be in the body. That's very helpful. And so the breath is one way, the posture is another way. Then the Buddha also mentions things like, know that, for example, you're reaching with your arm, or you're looking away, or you're closing your eyes, or know that when you're speaking, or kind of like these more daily activities all throughout the day. We can be mindful of this body, whatever it's doing, in whatever position it is in, or whatever movement it is doing. And so the sutta really also points to how the practice can be applied in our daily lives through being aware of the body and everything that's doing. There's even this little bit in it where it says, be aware of urinating and defecating, like just be aware of everything, basically. And so those are some of the really great practices that we can do, which is all part of this wise mindfulness, or right mindfulness, in the Noble Eightfold Path. And under the body aspect, there's also a practice that is called the 32 parts of the body, which is basically goes over these internal aspects of the body, or external as well, like noticing the body hair, noticing the nails, noticing being aware of bile and phlegm. I can't even pronounce that. Phlegm. you know, these, like, it's, of course, we can't really probably directly know that, but we can do kind of a body scan and know these aspects are there, noticing the skin. And so it's basically meant as a way to see the body as just kind of this bag full, like it, the comparison in the sutta is this bag full of rice, different rice types and grains that are all mixed up in this bag. And so are we basically this bag full of all this stuff, and we can be aware of all these different aspects. And it tends to help us to loosen up our sense of this body as this whole mass, kind of this compact thing. It's just based, it's just so many different aspects in our bodies. And all these aspects are also often kind of these things that we don't like as much about our body, like our body hair, you know, try to shave our body hair sometimes, or our phlegm or our earwax, or, you know, we don't really want to be in touch with that as much. So it's also meant to kind of disillusion ourselves of that the body is something beautiful and that we need to beautify that the body in some way. And so to this disenchantment, kind of trying to disenchant, get ourselves to be disenchanted about our bodies. And then there's a practice around the elements, called the elements, the four elements. So I think this was already a way of looking at the world that the Buddha, like that was current at the time of the Buddha, the four elements or the five elements, depends on which sutta you look at, there are four or five. One is earth, and part of earth is, for example, the hardness and the softness, the lightness and the heaviness, the roughness and the smoothness that I pointed to in the meditations today. Earth, water is one of the elements. So the cohesion, for example, when you make dough and you put water in the dough, like then it starts to be cohesive, right? That's the element of water working, and that same way that it works in our body like that. And then fire, so the warmth, the temperature, the coolness, the absence of temperature or the absence of warmth, is the fire element. And then the air element is the movement, and also the kind of the uprightness. The air element keeps us upright when we're, for example, sitting without back support, or we're standing. And then sometimes, not in this sutta, but in another sutta, sometimes space is mentioned as a fifth element. And then another body practice is the charnel ground practice, which is basically to reflect on death in a way. We reflect on how the body, the corpse, decomposes. So it's a really interesting practice. It's not meant to make us depressed. If it does, then we can let go of this practice. But sometimes it can be really helpful, like just like a body that has passed, is dead, will decompose, so will my body decompose someday. Also, kind of this disenchantment that can help, can come from this practice. And then we get to the second establishment of mindfulness, feeling tone. And so the Pali word is Vedana, and it's sometimes translated as feeling, but it's not kind of the feeling that we like happy or sad or that kind of thing. It's really this experience that we have of noticing that something is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And so it's a very direct, kind of very quick realization or experience. And what I said in the meditation is that often when we have a pleasant feeling, it turns into craving or wanting. When we have an unpleasant feeling, it turns easily into aversion or pushing away. When there's a neutral feeling, I didn't mention that one, but when there's a neutral feeling, it often turns into a kind of a delusion or ignorance where we don't see clearly. And so this feeling tone is very subtle. It's hard to see it in our practice. the mind needs to be pretty stable and settled for us to actually see the moment that feeling tone arises. But we can see it. It's possible. What I often find helpful is to work my way back. Like if there's craving present that I know, oh wait, there was a pleasant feeling tone. Or even the pleasant feeling tone of the craving itself. Then I notice how pleasant the craving feels or how unpleasant the aversion feels, for example. And sometimes this can be actually a really good practice, feeling tone, is in the sense that if there's something that we don't like, that we can notice the unpleasantness of it, and that gives a little bit of space. If we notice, oh, this is really unpleasant, it can help us to create some space between us and the unpleasantness that's going on. Then the third foundation or establishment of mindfulness is the mind. So feeling tone is already part of the mind, but here the mind is mentioned separately. And the Buddha says, for example, in this part, and one understands a mind with greed as a mind with greed, a mind without greed as a mind without greed, a mind with hate or aversion as a mind with hate or aversion, and a mind with delusion as a mind with delusion, and a mind without delusion as a mind without delusion. And so here you see these three characteristics that I just mentioned, greed or wanting, and the aversion or the hate, and the delusion are mentioned in this section. And so after this feeling tone of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, then these mind states might arise. And there is like so much to say about these three unwholesome, these are the three unwholesome roots of our existence. And there's so much to say about it, but probably have to save that for another time. There are actually more aspects in this part of the sutta, like constricted mind and scattered mind and expansive, unexpansive mind, supreme and unsupreme mind, and concentrated and unconcentrated mind, and a free and a not free mind. Those are some of the other aspects that we can pay attention to in this establishment of mindfulness. And then the last establishment or a foundation of mindfulness is the aspect that is called dhammas. And it's hard to translate this because dhammas can mean so many things in the texts. Like the Dhamma with the capital D is the teachings of the Buddha. And Dhammas with the small D can mean several different things, like phenomena or nature or law or something like that. So it can be all sorts of things. But in this section, what is actually being discussed are these several different lists that the Buddha mentions here and there in the suttas. So one of those lists is, for example, the five hindrances. Another one is the five aggregates. Then we have the six sense doors, the seven factors of awakening, and then the four noble truths. Those are the lists that are named in that sutta. So that's huge. That in itself can be several months of explanation and talks. So you can see how it's difficult to translate this word, but some of the words that are being used are mind objects or principles or phenomena. So different translators use a different way of translating this category. And there's one scholar, he's called Bhikkhu Anālayo, and he has found out that there are parallel suttas in different lineages, like in Chinese agamas, for example, or in Sanskrit. And this Satipatthana Sutta is also found in those lineages. And in those lineages, the only two lists that are named are the five hindrances and the seven factors of awakening, and not all the other ones. So perhaps he suggests perhaps those are additions from later times that, you know, it's used to be an oral tradition for several hundreds of years, and so perhaps some things got added in that people thought were useful or something. Yeah, it can be very useful to focus more on the five hindrances and the seven factors of awakening for this last category. It also simplifies it a little bit, but it's completely up to the practitioner or whoever teaches it to use also some of the other ones, or all of the other ones. And so that's the high level overview of this wise mindfulness, this path factor. And as you can tell, there can be much more said about this. But for now, I'm going to end with a quote from this sutta, the Satipatthana Sutta. So, practitioners, this path, namely the four foundations of mindfulness, is a path that goes in one way only, to the purification of beings, to the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, to the disappearance of pain and grief, to the attainment of the true way, to the realization of Nibbana. Nibbana means awakening.